How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Dead Jester Productions podcast. I'm your host, Josh or J. Moskers, joined this week by special guest Ronnie Pascal, comedian, entertainer, genius, perhaps.
Ooh, I love genius. Thanks for having me, Josh. I feel like not enough people introduce me as genius, and I feel like I need more of that in my life.
Genius is one of those phrases that's like, it's underused in the professional sense and overused at like college campuses.
Yeah. I feel like my issue with genius is like people forget to stipulate that they're only a genius generally in like one thing, like one area, right? Like they're a math genius, but they're probably not like a theater acting genius. Yeah. So I would like to consider myself a genius at like, I want to be like the first genius in like, I don't know what specific thing, but like the most specific thing.
It's incredibly niche where it's like you're the one person doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what that is.
That's like when I work with like other podcasters or content creators and they're like top 10 people who have hosted podcasts about finance in rural Missouri. Like, okay.
Yeah, I want to be like
the top 10. There's like 8 people doing that. How'd you miss out?
Yeah, I'm number 9. I'm on the fringe. I'm not happy about being on the fringe there.
Yeah. No, all the time I see that where they have like these self-assessed awards in these very specific manners. And I'm like, okay, I mean, fair enough. Whatever you got to do to market yourself. But you don't see me over here putting like number 1 podcast hosted in my house.
I can't even say that because my roommate is a famous magician. So I can't even be like number 1 best performer even in this household. Because like I'm the number 1 best performer maybe in my bedroom, is it?
Walks in like, damn it.
Yeah, and it's like, ah, foiled again. And like my girlfriend used to be a stand-up comedian. So like I'm not even the funniest person in the house. So like my like, what are they, superlatives are smaller and smaller.
It's like top 10 in my home of 3 people.
It's very disappointing. Yeah. There's just no winning.
Yeah. But no, before we dive into everything. So you, comedian, how'd you get into that? Out of curiosity.
Comedian. So like the very beginning.
You started out as a genius and then moved into comedian?
Yeah, I want to be like specifically like a comic genius because I was like, there's not a lot of those. And then I did some research and I was like, there's a lot of comic geniuses actually. So then I kept on trying to make it more specific. I was like, improv comic genius who writes dad jokes. And then I kept on getting smaller and smaller. So now I'm like improv genius who likes dad jokes, who lives in Los Angeles on a very specific street, who is named Ronnie.
At this exact address.
At this exact address. I won't give it here because one time I was doing a podcast and then I jokingly gave my address and I told them to bleep it out later and they didn't.
Oh, that's good.
And then somehow got back to my then roommate and he was infuriated.
I'm at the point now where people could find me so easily. This is episode 219 of this podcast. Mm-hmm. The last show I worked on, we ended at 501. I've done a couple of like on and off ones in between there. So like I've mentioned where I live and I've made so many references to like places I've worked in like local universities and things like that. People could find me so easily if they really wanted to.
Yeah. And
I welcome it. That could be an entertaining experience, I suppose.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same exact thing of like, I want to be stalked. I want paparazzi. Like that's the life like I dream of. And yet nothing. I have like 2 internet fans who like all of my things no matter what. And I'm like, I want more of that.
That'd be our luck. It's like, oh, finally, I'm going to be famous. People are stalking me. And like you wind up on the news because your stalker killed you or something.
Like, yeah. All right. So origin, improv comedy origin stories real quick was I was a little kid and my brother, my mom and I were watching the Dick Van Dyke Show. And someone on that show told a joke. And then later on, my brother told my mom that same exact joke. He kind of butchered it a little bit, but he got it mostly right. And my mom died laughing. And I remember in that moment feeling the most amount of jealousy I felt in my entire life. And ever since, so I was maybe like 7 or 8 years old. And then ever since then, I memorized every single joke I could find. And then I went to a Catholic school, and I was afraid of like proclaiming I was funny out loud, but I was like a little secret jokester, like a class clown, but not public. Does that make sense? And the way that I've like likened it in my brain, I don't know if this is offensive or not, but I said I was like the suicide bomber of jokes. Like I was in and out. No one saw it coming, but someone was laughing.
I'm sure and that goes over well at a Catholic school.
Yeah, Catholic school. I was like a little Catholic boy. It wasn't pretty. And then that was early, like teens maybe. I don't know. And then for the next like 10 years, I was like, whatever, jokes are stupid. Can't make a living doing that. And then when I was like 25, I got passed over for a job promotion that I thought I was getting. And then I said, you know what? I'm moving to New York City and becoming a comedian. And people are like, what are your qualifications? And I was like, don't have any, don't care. And I spent the last now 13 years trying to figure out still, why am I qualified to do this?
I mean, is anyone ever qualified to be a comedian? Really? Usually it's their life turns into a wreck for a brief period of time and they use that to create jokes.
Yeah, I think like nowadays, like the prerequisite is like you have to get a bachelor's, you have to get a master's, you have to get a doctorate in something unrelated to comedy. Realize that you have $200,000 of debt, and then you're qualified to be a comedian. So you're like, my life is not how I wanted it to be. But yeah, I mean, I did the college route late, so I don't even have that debt. So maybe that's why I'm. Failing at, I'm not failing at comedy. I'm doing pretty good, but
see, I went about it the wrong way. Cause, like I see all these people, not let me rephrase that. I see a number of people having like their college payments wiped clean. I have family members like that, former coworkers. I'm like, cool. Meanwhile, I went to school and immediately worked my ass off and paid it off. And I'm like, damn it. I should have wrote it out a little bit.
Yeah, you should have been like, that's like one time where like laziness paid off. Not necessarily lazy, but like if you're just paying the minimums, like, and then Biden's like wiping away all your debt, and you're just like,
family member wise, it was not laziness. It was in school for decades, multiple master's degrees, and I'm like, all right, you know what? Maybe you deserve this one. You've worked like crazy. You've done as much as possible to do as much for other people. Maybe you're one of the people that deserves to, you know, a little pat on the back, wipe the slate clean sort of thing.
Yeah. For that person, I would say like they're basically a genius at getting a master's degree.
Yeah. I went to school, 3 different universities, left them all. I was like, no, can't do this. I need to. Part of it was, I didn't like being kind of trapped in, hey, do all of these other things that aren't really relative to what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And then after that, the third school I went to was for computer science. I just hated it. I don't like coding. I didn't know what I was getting into, really. Like I was into like web design. I still am to an extent, but like web design, like video game design. And I was like, this could be interesting. And like day one, the professor in the, I forget what the class was called, but he's like, all right, I'm going to assume you guys all have like some sort of a background in this, so we'll jump right in. I'm like, I have no background in this. And so we just went right in with it. It's like, all right, so, you know, we all know like how to do this. Let's write a line of code I forget what he even did. I know we ended up going backwards because I had to learn how to do like probability, where it's like roll a dice essentially or die. And like I had to start from scratch. I still have my textbooks up on one of my bookshelves here in the office. I look at them every day thinking, what a waste.
I think the only thing I ever learned how to code was Hello World and like QBasic or whatever, and I couldn't do that now.
Yeah. No, not really. Whenever I need code now, I use like Chat GPT and like come up with a line of code, and then I run tests on it and I'm like, this works. And I just read over it enough to the point where I get a vague understanding of how it works and I can edit it a tiny bit.
So Chat GPT, I know it's write codes, Is it good code though? Like usable?
It can be. I think part of the problem is it, depending on what you're doing, it's very specific case scenarios. Like I said, I use it more for like website building, and it's just a time saver in most cases. But like, for example, I'll give it a specific example. I'm working with a company right now who they have a website where they sell products, e-commerce, and then they have, you know, a Facebook shop set up. And the Facebook shop, all of the information on Facebook is taken from their website, which is built through Shopify, which is a e-commerce platform.
Mm-hmm.
And so like all the data from Shopify is literally taken from the back end and brought straight to Facebook. But on the front, like the customer facing side of things on their website, they don't want a lot of the descriptions for products and stuff like that shown because they have third party apps making it look fancy and whatnot. So I had to go in and enter all of the information for all of the products and then enter code to hide all of that information on the customer side of things, but it's still there to be transferred to Facebook. And so I used ChatGPT to like generate a sample line of code. I brought that over to the website and I changed it up until it worked. And then I put that across everything. So it's like trial and error
quite a bit,
but it gets your foot in the door to the point where it's okay. I have an understanding of what's working out here.
Now I like that. Cause like for me being a comedy writer guy, mm-hmm. I haven't used anything that ChatGPT has generated, but I'm like curiously, what can you generate ChatGPT? And I just typed into ChatGPT, write 5 jokes about coding websites. Do you want to hear like 1 or 2 of these?
Sure.
Why did the website developer go broke?
I don't know.
Because he didn't know how to code his expenses.
Oh my God.
All right, one more. Why was the website cold?
Why?
Because it forgot to wrap itself in a div blanket.
Interesting.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I'm not in depth enough with coding to div blanket. What does this mean?
Div blanket, D-I-V. I don't know if I even pronounced that right. I assume.
You know what? I can't even find anything about that, to be honest.
All right. I'll do one more and then see if this. Why did the website get into trouble at school?
Why is that?
It kept copying and pasting without citing its sources.
Like, wow. I can see why you're not using this in your routine.
Yeah. There's been like a few times where it's like, I'm stuck on a joke. What happens if I ask ChatGPT for any? And it's just always like jokes like this. I was like, good thing it sucks at writing jokes. But what I do use ChatGPT for is prank phone calls. I'm just kidding. Like, wouldn't it be amazing if it was like the world's best prank phone caller?
It's funny like how part of the reason that like ChatGPT is the main example, but like a lot of the AI generators and things like that, I think one of the main issues that you see so many problems popping up with them from is that people don't know how to use them properly. And I count myself in this group. But like there are specific, like, if you look at some of like the professionally made prompts to get it to work properly, it's like gibberish. Like it doesn't make sense, but it gets like a very specific answer back. But like most people using it, it's like, hey, ChatGPT, tell me this. And it just provides every bit of information even remotely relevant to that. So it's like a lot of it is getting it like a specific question or prompt to it to get the best response back. Which has been like a learning experience for me, generating lines of code and like prompting it to get like ideas for things. Like we use it for, like I said, generating code, but then how to target specific audiences for marketing purposes and getting like specific enough prompts to that is a struggle at times. Cause like, I'll be like, why don't you come up with like a scenario? I'm paraphrasing. Come up with a scenario like in which we need to market this product. And it's like, okay, here's the age range you'd break it down in, you know, here's like the salary you'd break it down by. And then I take that and I cross-reference it with actual sources to see like how close it is.
But sounds better than how I've used it.
Yeah, it's mainly the coding thing, to be honest. Like that's the main thing I use it for, because it's so much quicker and efficient than like Googling something like that.
I just typed write a prank phone call script without anything other. Because like what you're saying is like you need very specific. And all I wrote was write a prank phone call script.
I hope it gives you the idea to have call one Chinese place and then hang up, put them on hold and call another one. That would be great.
ChatGPT. Close, but it like I didn't read the whole thing because it's very long. But it's prank calling a pizza place.
Mm.
And I'm just like, this might be the future and I don't like it.
I use a thing called a novel AI, which is essentially ChatGPT, but it writes like stories essentially. And I did a thing where one of my friends is an author, and she's in the process of finishing up her book. And I was like, I bet I can write a book faster than you. And I sat there, it took me 15 minutes, and I generated like a, I don't know, like 3-chapter-long book, like a very short one.
Mm-hmm.
Like a novella, essentially. So I generated this story, and then I used the Bing image generator to get a couple of images to go along with it. And I'm like, here we go. Completed a book. Just needs to be published. And it's hilarious. It's so bad. Like, the writing, it doesn't remember things well. Like, it can't hold on to information very well. It just refers to... how to explain it? It'll refer back on its previous like text that it's generated, but it doesn't understand it properly. So you'll have a story. It's like, oh, here's Bill and Jim. They're at the supermarket. They run into a friend of theirs. Bill and James will talk to this person. Like, it messes up the names immediately. And they'll lose track of the scenarios and stuff. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play around with. But there's a long way to go before it's stealing everyone's jobs. Like some people make it out to be.
Yeah, I was initially nervous because so when ChatGPT was released to the public, what, roughly a year ago, and the first night that like general public had access to it, I opened it up and I had like 10 premises of jokes that I hadn't finished in my notes, and I said, ChatGPT, finish these jokes. And so it gave me a list of some of the worst jokes that I've ever written, but then I made a video of like me just reading them, of like these are my ChatGPT versions of the jokes, and people were mad at me. They're like, you're gonna get comedians' jobs stolen. And I was like, no I'm not.
Did you see the like AI generated Seinfeld?
Yeah, that was terrifying. Yeah.
It's weird. On one hand, it's like it's super fascinating how it's able to put that together.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, it shows just how far AI has to go to like understand how humor works.
For sure. But also like it would get terrifying. I don't know if you watched a lot of it or like the clips. Not really. Of it.
I just watched tiny little bits of it.
Yeah, I probably watched in total like an hour, but like over like the course of like 5 minutes a day for like a week or two. And there was moments where certain characters would stop being within the show. They would look at the camera and say something like, we're stuck in this metaverse, or however they worded it. And I was like, this is terrifying. Those are real people in there. Those are geniuses stuck in a TV.
Exactly. Everyone's a genius.
Everyone is a genius in their own way, right?
I'm around enough dumb people to know that's not the case, unfortunately.
I want to assume that you mean coworkers and not like family members. Don't answer that. Don't get in trouble.
There are definitely people I work with that are far from geniuses. They are self-titled gurus, which I find hilarious. Anyone that calls himself a guru, I can't take seriously to begin with. Because to me, go ahead.
What are like things that people call themselves gurus about?
Like people call themselves like self-help gurus, like finance gurus, like the people in my circle of influence are like marketing gurus, and it could not be further from the truth. I'm the guru here, and then they proceed to say a bunch of things which are just blatantly incorrect, lacking factual evidence and things like that. I'm like, man, you're not killing it. I don't know what the opposite of killing it is, but that's what you're doing.
Yeah, you need to get like there needs to be like a certificate program to get a guruship. Like I'm an apprentice guru. I feel like that is the start.
Yeah, I don't know why. Every time I hear someone call themselves a guru, I just think of Jeff Bridges as the dude in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how I imagine, like, what they should look like.
I mean, that guy was a genius on certain levels, too.
That's why I said that's what they look like. I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I give him more credit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, like, there's that. And then, like I said, I live in a very redneck style area. I'm surrounded by, you know, my part-time co-host Klaus isn't here tonight, but he and I were discussing the other day, just what it's like. I mean, I can hear it now. My office is like somewhat like partially soundproofed. It doesn't matter. Their trucks are so loud. Like, it's literally like 50% of the population here drives the giant oversized, like, Ram 1500 Ford F450 trucks. They all have the tires, I don't know what you call it, but it's the tires when they're outside from underneath the body of the vehicle.
Got it. And I know what you're talking about. I don't know what they're called either.
I don't know what that's called.
But there are two things though where I judge a truck. Like a big truck, I'm like, don't love it. But do they have those spikes on the side of the tires?
Sometimes, not always.
Yeah, and then I haven't seen these as much, but like, I don't know if you remember, like 10 years ago, there was truck nuts that were really popular.
I do know that. That's rare around here.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do that because they won't want something kicking up dust. Everyone around here drives trucks and they don't haul anything in them. They just drive them to drive them. It's like a status thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the status goes out the window the second they pull up out front of their trailer and they get home. And I'm just like, your entire life savings are in your vehicle. Not your family.
Yeah.
Not your
Those F-150s are a lot of money.
I'm going to make this up, so don't quote me on this, but like, this is referring back to people I work with. I work, I'm going back and forth. Like, I'm self-employed, partially self-employed, and then partially I work a full-time job as well. So I go into my actual job, I get there and there's a line of trucks and it's hilarious because they literally get bigger as you go down the line. And the cheapest one there is like $70,000.
Yeah, they're expensive.
I'm conservative when it comes to spending money. Like, I hoard my money.
Yes, yeah,
I don't like spending on anything. And so, like, I pull up. I got a Hyundai Kona. I spent like $23,000 on it, which was a lot. That's before the trade-in amount I got and everything on my previous car. So I'm just like, all right, I'm spending a ton of money here. Like, I'm gonna keep this car for like 15 years. I pull up my first day, I'm just like, oh, these are the types of people I'm dealing with. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Just,
every truck completely like spotless, not a speck of dirt on it. You know, it's just never putting anything in the bed because you don't want to scratch up the thing designed to carry like wood and rocks and things, like designed to prevent, you know, damage to it when it's hauling stuff.
And they're like 7 miles per gallon.
Oh, it's pathetic. Yeah.
Well, I saw in the wild
trucks long enough. I'll stop.
Well, in the wild the other day, I finally saw my first Elon Musk Cybertruck, and I was like,
oh, man,
that thing is hideous. And then I texted my brother and I said, hey, would you drive that? Because we were stuck in traffic, so I had enough time to take a picture without being unsafe. And I was like, would you drive this? And my brother just quoted John Mulaney, famous stand-up, who said, it's the life of luxury, or like the height of luxury, or whatever the quote is. And I was like, I could never, even as a joke, wouldn't drive that car.
That vehicle has been a disaster since well before launch.
Well, and launch was only like what, like a month or two ago?
Something like this. It hasn't been long.
Yeah.
They've had so many issues. And unfortunately, a lot of those issues are persistent throughout all Tesla vehicles. Like the panels on the body of the vehicle just don't line up properly, which is not great. They're terrible for repair. This is the Cybertruck in particular. Like the stainless steel finish is terrible for repairs because you have to replace the entire thing. You can't just do a quick repair job like on a normal vehicle. They're terrible for rust. There's that, like the self-driving, I'm doing air quotes that you can't see, self-driving.
I saw some hazards.
Yeah. Like, they have so many issues with them, known issues, mind you, and it's just push them out. And the owner, the company I work with, the one company I work with, he just bought a Tesla. And I was like, yeah, I was looking at them like years ago before they were really popular. I was curious about it because electric vehicles weren't really popular yet. And I was like, yeah, I just didn't want to get one. I didn't want to be like an early adopter for something like that. And he's like, yeah, they got rid of like all the issues and stuff though. So, you know, now's the time to get one. I'm like, you've got, in my mind, him saying that was like when George Bush says, we did it, mission accomplished. And then we proceeded to stay in the Middle East for another like 15 years, 20 years.
I just looked up the cost of a Cybertruck. Do you want to guess how much they are?
I'm going to say $85,000.
Very close. Starting at 81.8.
Oh, I knew that. I forget what the original cost was. I remember they did an example, like a comparison rather, of pre-launch, like what they promised, and then after launch, what you actually got. And like pre-launch, it was like, I'm going to make these numbers up for argument's sake, but it was like, you can get 500 miles per, not gallon, but 500 miles per charge. It has like this much horsepower and whatever other features. And then it comes out and they're like, at launch, they're like, actually it only gets 300 miles per charge and whatever. And they're running tests on it and it gets like 200 at most or something.
Oh my God.
And like the final results, like after launch compared to what they initially promised, you get like a third of the features for like a little over two times the cost. I was like, man, what a swindle.
Yeah, they definitely won that battle.
That and the resale value on them is terrible. Because if you pay for added features, that gets reset upon resale. So if you pay to unlock like the extra horsepower, heated seats, self-driving.
So you don't even get to sell that.
Yeah, that gets locked when you resell it. And so the next owner has to repurchase all of that.
So like when I was a kid, I'm in my late 30s right now, so like buying video games, they were like this commodity that you could have that when you were poor, you could sell your PlayStation back to a store. But now video games are all downloaded for like 90% of them. And so they're morks. So if you buy the cart, so I have a Nintendo Switch, and if I buy a used game, it's like $20 if you buy the cartridge. But if you buy the used or like the game on the internet, it's like $60. And I'm like, I can't resell that either.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's kind of backwards the way it works. You'd think the digital version would be cheaper because they're not having to create physical product. There's no shipping involved, no manufacturing process.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of coders who did work, and I mean, they do deserve to be paid for their work, but like
for sure.
Come on,
I don't know if we had discussed it before on the show or if it was. I have so many conversations it just runs together, but we're talking about how you can't even buy physical copies of stuff anymore. And so like you lose at a certain point, you can't own anything, which is frustrating because like current video games, like you go out and buy a disc of something, the game's not even on there. It's like 1 megabyte. It's like
it's like a download code.
Yeah. You put it in, it's like, hey, I own this. And then you can download the game and then you can play it, but you still don't own it. It's super frustrating.
Funny because
same thing with like movies,
like 12, 13 years ago, when the game Skyrim came out, you get to download all of the game. And I'm sure this is still, I don't game as much as I used to, but I'm sure this is still a thing. You got to download all of the game ahead of time, except one file that made it all work. And so on launch night, you at like midnight that night, you got the key to start the game. And I, at that time, was like, this is so cool. And now as a grown adult, I'm like, I want a physical copy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unsettling at a point where you just can't own anything. And at any moment, they can just take it away from you.
Well, my girlfriend and I have been trying to combat that. It's not going well so far, but for Christmas, pirating. I bought... Yeah, kind of. I love... I'm not against pirate. No. I work in Hollywood, so like, what is pirating, bro? We bought a Blu-ray player on Christmas, and then once a week we go into Goodwill and buy all of the DVDs that we want that are in good shape, and they're like $2 or $3 each. Our ultimate goal is to like cut cords and not have streaming networks, but I was like, that's a ridiculous thought, because like that's just movies. We're not even getting TV shows at these Goodwill buys.
Yeah,
so we're not winning.
I pay for like I pay for ESPN and Paramount, and both of those are for football, soccer.
Yeah. That's and it. March and Madness, I assume.
No, I literally just watch soccer. That's it. That's the only thing I watch in the background when I'm working. And then outside of that, once the seasons are done, I turn it off. I unsubscribe until the season's back.
Who's your soccer team?
I'm a Barcelona fan.
Okay.
That's my team. I also watch Roma, AS Roma.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, I watch them. I don't follow them super close or anything.
Got it. Then
I watch Miami because they're the hot new thing in MLS.
Yeah. I watch LAFC because I live near them and they're like so fun.
Mm.
And I think like MLS, like I grew up not playing soccer because like, you play baseball, basketball, football as an American boy in the 90s. And now I'm like, oh my God, soccer players are worth like billions of dollars.
Not in the US. The US is bizarre the way they run their league.
Well, like Messi, though. I'm talking about like international stars. Like Messi's in the US who's like, ooh, worth $1 billion.
Most of his doesn't come from
Free America.
It's literally pre coming to the US, but also just like endorsements and things like that. Because, I mean, it's so weird. I won't divulge into soccer talk too much, but it's so weird how it works. How they just, the cap, like the salary cap is so low in the US.
Yeah.
The clubs, I forget if it was, I think it's the organization or something. I forget who said it. They're like, we don't trust the clubs with their own money. They won't spend it properly. And just, so every decision is based around really like preventing them from spending money. The way the season is set up is bizarre because like they're just getting into the swing of the season. I think they're 4 weeks in right now, whereas the rest of like the major leagues are like 24-25 weeks in. So like they're out of sync with every other major league, and now they're on international break, but Major League Soccer keeps playing anyway, so all of the best players are just gone from the league for a little bit. So it's just dumb. Everything about it is set up so poorly. The fact that they have a playoff system is stupid. It's the only league that does that. It's just dumb.
They got to cater to our dumb Americans.
It's frustrating. They're never going to become like a top 10 league or anything like that if they keep up what they're doing. There's no relegation. If you can finish dead last and there's no consequence.
That's true. I feel like there are baseball. I'm a huge baseball fan, and I'm like, there are teams that I would love to see get relegated down to like single A.
That's the point. Like that's the most one of the most exciting parts of the leagues. Like you watch the top like 2-3 teams, and then you watch the bottom 3 teams to see who makes it and who doesn't. Like it's like one of the most exciting parts about it. Most people don't even care about the bottom 3 teams, but they're excited to see like what's going to happen.
I want to see more relegation, but in real life.
Yeah.
We're like, if you're not a good teacher, if you're an 8th grade teacher and you suck, you have to go down to like 5th grade for a few years and figure your shit out before you're allowed
from high school back to middle school, back to elementary school, then back to like preschool. If you suck really bad.
You
can't teach them how to color in the lines well enough. You just get dropped down.
What happens if you are relegated and then you're so bad that you just keep going down? Is there like further down?
Talking about real life at this point? I'm
sure.
Yeah. I mean, in soccer, you just get to the bottom league and you just hang out there. But in real life, I guess you'd just be fired outright. I was like, I'm sorry, your teacher license is revoked.
So you could be a bottom feeder, but still like you're still a professional soccer player.
Yeah. If you get low enough down, if you get to the bottom couple of tiers, you start playing with people who have day jobs. There's I think it's in England right now. I forget. I don't follow the Premier League. There are teams like that where they have like just spectacular performances, like similar to March Madness with basketball, where you have these Cinderella story teams where no one expects them to do well and they do really well. Where you have teams like that, where it's people who literally work as like bankers during the day, and somehow they manage to like upset these big teams and make it far in the tournament.
Oh, I love that.
It's kind of hilarious, honestly. It's like, oh, these guys who are being paid tens of millions of dollars lost to a guy who works down at the grocery store.
I mean, when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a professional baseball player up until I was like 13. And I was like, all right, I'm done. And then I hadn't played in 20 something years. And then a couple years ago, I was like, I still want to play professional baseball. And so I Googled, like, can I be a professional baseball player? And I found a league. And
Google just laughs. It's like, oh. No,
yeah, Google not even didn't laugh. Google opposite of laugh. It was like, we found a league for you. It's called the Pecos League. And I was like, tell me more, Google. And it's like, if you spend money, you get to play professional baseball. But like, it's the lowest of the low level, but it also costs you money to play the games and to be on the team. It's so instead of getting like any sort of revenue or ticket sales, you're spending like upwards of like $10,000 a year just in insurance. And insurance is probably like, well, you're 40 years old. You haven't played baseball in 25 years and you smoke and drink. No, this is a no for me, dog.
Yeah, I played baseball until I was 12 or 13. I don't remember. And the reason I quit was because one of the coaches, we moved, I guess it would have been 13. Because when you move up to the teen league, the coaches changed. And one of the coaches there sucked. And the head coach, his son decided he wanted to play second base, which was my position. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I always play second base. He's like, well, you're going to play in the outfield now. I didn't like that. And I said, well, we should take turns. He said, no, you're just going to be in the outfield. And I guess he didn't like that I gave him a hard time. So in batting practice, he would hit me with pitches routinely. And I was like, this sucks. I'm fucking done.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know if the reason...
I would have been the greatest of all time, probably. I was a baseball genius.
Yeah, like on a Mike Trout level, I'm told.
Yeah. I, in all honesty, like I was above average, but like as a child. So
yeah, same.
Who knows? Who knows, right? Like I'm not, who knows as in who knows how good I actually was. I'm not great by any means, but like I could field really well, and you know I got on base a lot, but I also just kind of stood there and let them throw the ball because I knew they couldn't hit the strike zone.
Yeah, I remember like my first Little League game ever. I couldn't hit. Yeah, I was terrible. I was really good. I excelled in T-ball so good. And I was like, I'm the best baseball player ever. And then I got to coach pitch and I was like pretty good because they're throwing the ball like 20 miles an hour, crushing it as you do. And then I get up to Little League when they're throwing, I don't know what, 50 miles an hour. And you're like, oh my God, they're throwing gas at me. And, but I couldn't hit the ball. So first game didn't swing at all. And I walked and then I stole second and third and home all on like two plays. Cause like catchers can't throw you out.
Yeah. I had a very similar thing happen once where it was muddy, which is part of what helped. But I forget how I got on base, but I was on third base and I guess I'm conflating two different stories. I had an inside the park home run once because it was muddy. And I bunted, went down the mud, and the catcher couldn't pick it out properly. And then by the time he got out, he panicked because I was so close to first base that he just threw it way into the outfield. And the kid in outfield wasn't paying attention. So I got all the way around the bases. By the time he threw it in, it wasn't even remotely on target. And then the other time I forget how I got on base, but I was on third. And one of my teammates was on second base. There was a wild pitch and I almost went, I was like, oh crap, hold on. And like the kid's not paying attention. And every time the pitcher would turn around, he would face first base. Like that's the direction he would turn. And he just took his time, wasn't looking up. And so the catcher threw the ball back. The pitcher caught it and then like started to turn. And so I ran and he wasn't paying attention. So I scored. And I was like, yes, sweet, stole home. And I remember literally the very next pitch the coach sent his son. And of course he got thrown out. It's like, of course they're going to look for it the next play. The kid's on high alert now.
Yeah, now they're like baseball geniuses. They're like, we gotta get this guy out.
But yeah, baseball was ruined for me by one bad coach, essentially. It's frustrating. I think
that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
I looked at
parents need to be less involved in their kids' sports from like a managing perspective. Like the dads that get way too excited and like yelling and screaming at their kids' football games or baseball games. Mm-hmm. Like the moms that get way too invested in like their girls in like cheerleading or gymnastics or whatever. I realize that these are things that I was invested in. So I'm painting this in a very sexist way at this point. But I think my point stands. Like parents get way too competitive It's like they're channeling their insecurities through their children. Like, if my kid's successful, I'm successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating. It's so frustrating because then at the end of the day, the kids are just miserable.
Well, like, on a similar but weirdly different note, I recently looked at my old Little League picture. So these are a bunch of, what, 7, 8-year-olds, whatever. Yeah. And I didn't recognize any of the... So I knew every player on the team and I knew what all their parents looked like. And then I realized something, a weird detail I never noticed back then, was none of the coaches were parents of kids on our team. And I'm just like, who are these men That's volunteering really surprising. For this job? Yeah, it was very strange. Yeah. It made me have like creepy vibes.
And it, on one hand, it is creepy. On the other hand, I'm like, now you have a fair environment. Cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It was weird.
Yeah. No, I say that if like when my girlfriend and I have kids, I'm definitely going to be that soccer dad that like I will absolutely try and be the coach. One, I have enough experience that I'll know what I'm doing at least. But on the other hand, too, like I'm going to be that the dad just pacing up and down the sideline is way too serious about like a 4-year-old and how he's moving off the ball.
I feel that my girlfriend and I are talking about kids in like general terms right now, and I didn't think anything of it. And then a few days ago we walked from our house to this park to walk our dogs, and there was either a Little League or a T-ball tryout. I couldn't really figure out their ages too good. I'm not a good gauge of that anymore. And she said, "Oh my God, this is so cute. This is my favorite thing I've ever seen." And I was just like, "You think this is cute?" And then I was like, "Oh my God, I see the dad yelling." And I was like, "I should be upset by this, but this is what I think is cute, is the dad yelling." I was like, "Yeah, dad, get in their butts." Not like, that's, wait, I'm going to rephrase that.
Perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to cut that out if you don't want to. Say,
I also can't tell people's ages. Like I, even when I was in school, when I was like a senior in high school, the kids that were freshmen looked like they were like 7 years old. It was so bizarre. I don't know if you had a similar experience, but it was shocking. And like,
have you seen kids now?
Not really. I live in the middle of nowhere, so we don't get a lot of foot traffic.
Oh, they look so young.
It's weird. Like, cause I look back, like I went through my high school yearbook the other day, like a week or two ago, because I was rearranging the office for the 1,000th time. And like, I looked at it when my freshman yearbook, and I look at the seniors in there, I'm like, God damn, they all look like they're in their 30s by comparison. It's bizarre. And if you go back and look at like a yearbooks from like the, like 19, like 90s or something, they all look like actual full grown adults compared to like when I was in school. It's so weird how like people just keep looking younger and younger and younger.
Yeah, there's this like yearbook picture of Steve Martin, the comedian, that just pops up on the internet every now and then. You're like, he was 40 years old in high school somehow.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, good for him.
Because I remember like seeing my grandfather has like so many photos of him when he was just out right after he graduated, joined the military. And like, he literally looks like himself as like a man pushing 90. It's just like same facial structure, like obviously more hair. Doesn't have all the wrinkles, but he looked like a middle-aged man.
Yeah.
It's like so weird.
If you look close enough in my high school yearbook picture, you could see the bald spots in my hair, and you could see like the walker that I had to use to get to the photo shoot. So I was like,
It's bizarre. And then you go to my photo and it's not there because I fucked up.
Oh no, what happened?
My mom and dad are both like not professional photographers, but they do it like as more than a hobby. I don't know how to frame it properly, but they're both very good photographers. And my mom had taken senior photos for me, submitted them to the school, and there was confusion about those and the like actual school photos you get at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And then somehow there was confusion and they just didn't print a photo. It's just a blank like photo. And it says like camera shy or something in it. I forget how it's phrased.
Oh no, that's funny.
And I'm one of like two people in the entire yearbook. I'm like, God damn it.
Oh,
like,
no.
I look like an idiot. I'm like, I don't care one way or another. Like generally, like I don't care what photo it is. I mean, but the fact that there's like camera shy, I'm like, there's like a dozen photos submitted here. You could just put one of them in, please.
I like that better than, like, I have a proper yearbook picture because I did pay for those, but I don't have a proper prom picture because my mom was like, I'm not going to have you pay $250 or whatever the amount was to get, I don't even know if they charged you. Like, you know, when you walk into prom, there's that like photo booth situation.
I've never been to prom. I did not like event. I don't like large scale events. So I'm like paranoid of it. So I never went.
You might like this story then. I didn't plan on going to prom, but my mom was a teenager when she had me, right? And so she didn't finish high school. She went back and got her GED later, but they don't have a prom for GED, unfortunately. And when I was graduating high school, she was like, I need to vicariously live the prom experience through you. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And then my mom was like, you're going to prom and you're going to, I had just started dating my first serious girlfriend. We were like 3 months into our relationship. And my mom was like, you're going to take Justine. You're going to buy her a dress. You're going to pay for a tuxedo. You're going to rent a limo. And I'm going to pay for a hotel room for y'all for after. And I was like, that's the most disgusting thing that's ever happened in my entire life. And she goes, as long as you tell me all of the stories later. And I was like, absolutely not. But unfortunately,
the most grotesque thing imaginable.
Like, yeah. You know, in hindsight, that's what I should have done. Instead, I was just like, we went, we danced, and we came home. She goes, did you guys stay in a hotel room? I was like, yeah, but we slept in separate beds because my mom messed up and got us a room with two twin beds or two queen beds, whatever the smallest one is.
Yeah.
Instead of like, I know what she was, my mom wanted like babies young. So she was probably like, this will be my chance to be a young grandma. And then we're like, you've been foiled, lady.
Turns out I'm a eunuch.
Oh. Yes, I am a eunuch. I am dead. I'm both dead inside and down there.
No, I've gotten over it because I do like, I don't do public speaking, but I have to speak in public for work somewhat regularly. But at the time, like I was, and even to this day, like I don't like being in public, like large, even family like gatherings, like I don't enjoy it. I don't like being around large groups of people. Unless I'm in like control of the situation. Like we're planning our wedding coming up for the end of the year here.
Oh, nice.
It's one of those things where I'm like, I'm not looking forward to it because I don't like I said, don't like the idea of being around a ton of people, especially being the center of attention. But on the other hand, I get to be in complete control of what happens or doesn't happen. So I'm not like worried about it. I'm still on the fence of whether or not I want to give a speech because it'll inevitably turn into me just roasting my family.
But oh my God, that's the best thing.
I can also see like her side of the family being upset by that. Where it just seems like I'm berating people, but who knows? But yeah, going back to like, I never went to prom because I just, at the time I was like, you know, a teenager and like paranoid of being around groups of people and like any, you know, any insecurity you can imagine is always like racing through my mind at that age.
Yeah.
And my friend's like, oh, you're not going to go, whatever. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go. I don't want to. He's like, he's like, yeah, whatever. And he went and I spent the night hanging out with his sister instead. It was his fault. I never told, but our other friend knew about it. We would we all lived in the same like housing development together, the three of us. We were all in the same class, same grade, and so every day, like once he was able to drive, he'd come and pick us up because it's literally like five houses away, and so he'd drive all three of us to school. And his sister was in a year younger than us. And so we drive to school and I would be crammed into the back. He had a Ford Mustang, like coupe, I guess. I don't know different models of Mustangs, but just cramped in the back. So we're just pressed up against each other. And that was our experience for like a year. And so we got very familiar with one another. And we'd just chat every once in a while. And then we'd get to school and like, we'd all start the day in different classes. But her and I went to like next door classes, and so I just walked with her to class and we became friends and we just started hanging out. And it was just hilarious watching him like shit talk his sister, like, you know, brother and sister, like they'd shit talk her or whatever. and I'd roll to punches or whatever. And then, like, I'm just sitting in the back watching her, like, side-eye me the entire time. Definitely the fact that we were hanging out and spending time together.
But I like that.
It was a good prom on my end, not going to prom.
Well, you made me think of, I am the oldest of five, and my mom and my dad are always like, when are y'all getting married to people? Mm-hmm. And I think all five of us were kind of like, we watched you guys have young babies. We're not going to do that. And we're all like smart, reasonable humans and whatever. And then a few years ago, the first of us got married, but they like
the first to fall, as they say. Yeah.
The first to fall. Yeah. I'm fine with that. And him and his girlfriend were together for a while before they got married, but then they eloped and they just kind of went to a city hall, got married. And in hindsight, listening to you talk, I thought something that I never thought before, and it makes me sad now. It's they probably got married in that setting, didn't invite anyone because they didn't want me to mess up their wedding by like roasting everyone. They're like, we know what Ronnie's gonna do.
I would be absolutely fine with doing that. Like, that's one of the things I told my girlfriend. I was like, I'd love to do that. Saves a bunch of money. Don't have to deal with the hassle of everything. And instead, we went the opposite route where it's like, we're not inviting, but we're inviting like just under 100 people, which is not a lot
by
most wedding standards, I guess. It's just like all the costs add up so quickly. I'm just like, man, this could have been basically free. Every time she bitches and complains about something costing a lot, I'm like, yeah, I'm paying for it. Thank you.
Do you know what City Hall costs, though?
I don't. I have no idea. Never been married before. Don't know any of the costs, typically.
Yeah, me either. I want to look that up right now. Marriage license costs.
Yeah, it can't be that much, realistically, I'd imagine. Couple hundred bucks is fine.
So I'm in Los Angeles, so that's what I looked up. $91.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah. And then I bet you don't have to. Oh, and since I assume, I don't know specifically what city you live in, but I just did Pittsburgh just because I assume that's closest to you. $80 in Pittsburgh.
Interesting.
And then Philly.
That's a small town, so it's probably dirt cheap.
Philly's 90, so it's like somewhere between 80
and 90. I'm going to say $75 probably where I live. If it's
oh my God, see?
Being in a rural area.
Oh, but if you want a Quaker license, it's $100 in Philly.
Oh my God.
I don't know that Quakers are more famous or something there. I don't really know.
I don't even know what a Quaker license would mean, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't either. I spent very little time in Pennsylvania.
I looked it up for my town and it sent me to MapQuest for some reason, which I've not seen MapQuest in like 2 decades.
Yeah. Oh my God. I used to have MapQuest before, for the young kids listening, MapQuest is Google Maps before there's
$40,
like,
by the way. I'm sorry to cut you off. $40. Yeah,
that's amazing. And so I used to use MapQuest, but I didn't have like a printer or anything. So I would hand write all the directions. And my father would call me up. He's like, you gave me directions to the wrong place. Can you get me to where I'm supposed to be? And I'm like, that'll be another $40, please.
I remember my stepdad got a GPS right when they were first starting to get like popular, but he didn't use it properly. Like we'd be going to like a specific like state park for like camping and he would just type in the name of the nearby town and just not, you know, I mean like a specific address, just the name of the town. And so it just puts you on a random dot near the town. And so we would be like, I remember the one time we could see the park. Right. We're across this pond from it. And it's like, there's the park right there. We can see it. We don't know how to get to it. And we're just driving around on this back road, unsure of how to get back to the main road and back to the park. And I'm just like, man, just you couldn't put in the full address, could you? But yeah, going back to like the wedding talk, like I'm like trying to figure out how I want to handle it if I give a speech. Because I know my default is, which is keep roasting people or just making specific jokes and references and to the point where no one gets what I'm talking about, where I just narrow down the audience further and further until no one gets it. I'm just laughing to myself and it's no fun for anyone else, which I'm fine with, but it seems like a bad experience for everyone.
to like go back to what we started with, like the more specific you get, the more likely you are to be a genius, right? So like,
I guess
your references will be like genius level at that point.
I already make a ton of references that my girlfriend doesn't get, because like I remember watching like Monty Python Flying Circus growing up, you know, just odds and ends like films and stuff like that growing up. I spent a lot of time with my grandfather and my grandmother growing up, and like they would have on all these weird old movies and TV shows and stuff like that, and so I would have all these weird obscure references that people in my age group normally wouldn't get. And so I'll make jokes and they'll be like, what are you talking about? That's what it's like all the time with my girlfriend. That and the fact that I just improv shit all the time, like randomly. So it doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I'll just start doing accents for the hell of it and just talking for the sake of it. And she will get so confused and won't know if I'm doing a bit in reference to something or just saying shit. And I refuse to give in and acknowledge what she's saying.
Well, like on a very similar note, our 1 year anniversary was like a week ago. And I gave her a card that was really like nice of like, you're my favorite person ever, blah, blah, blah. And then today I was sitting at the kitchen table and the card is on the kitchen table still. And I don't know why, but I started drawing in it. And I imagine when she gets home, she's going to be weirded out. But like, it's a bit very similar to what you're talking about, where I drew Bart Simpson and Bart Simpson says something like, hey, girl, how you doing? Or something really dumb like that. Yeah. And then Homer Simpson, I drew next to Bart and Homer says, that's not how to pick up a lady. The way to pick up a lady is to say whatever, like a dumb pickup line. And then I drew Grandpa Simpson next to that. And it said, back in my day, the way that you picked up a lady was to buy her a jar of peanut butter and tell her you fancy her. And like, none of that is rooted in anything we've ever talked about. And so when she sees that today, I assume when she gets home, she's going to be like, what the fuck were you doing? And I'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, one of my favorite bits to do is like, we'll be cleaning dishes after dinner and I will just go into a rant where it's like a Spanish soap opera and then British people show up or something like that. And it's just, there's no rhyme or reason. I just stick to the accents I'm capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, I'll break out like South Africa or something.
Ooh, what's that one sound like?
Not South, Uganda or something in Africa. I'm not good enough to tell you all the accents in Africa, but just like, it's like, oh, you think you can do that? You cannot do that. Like stuff like, I'm not good at it, mind you, but like stuff like that. And I just make up a storyline on the spot and just roll with it. And she is trying to figure out if I'm referencing something that we've watched together or like anything at all. And no, never is. Never is. But I just keep it going for like 15 minutes and it just annoys the hell out of her, but it's hilarious to me.
Well,
but that's the kind of shit I do at my wedding and people are going to get really upset about it.
I but love it might that be
worth it for me.
Like the other day I pulled a prank on my girlfriend that I wasn't planning on pulling. And to me, it was the funniest thing in the world. And she was clearly not amused, but we were at Target and I was trying to do a bit. I don't remember what the bit was. It was non-consequential, not funny. She wasn't paying attention. She like tuned me out. She like was, she just like, to like block my bit. I realize what she does now. She picks up her phone and pretends to be texting someone work related. And I was like, all right, I see what she's doing. So she was ignoring me. And I, instead of throwing a tantrum like I wanted to, we were standing next to a display of hygiene diapers for adults, like or like Depends and stuff like that. And so she has her basket in her hand and I picked up one and put it in her basket. I was like, she's definitely going to notice this. She didn't. So we walked around the store for like 10 minutes and I'm just dying laughing. And while she's like, I thought she was like, knew the diapers were there, but was ignoring them to like appease me or whatever. And then she goes through the checkout line with the diaper still in her basket. And I'm just like couldn't help but cry laugh. And I was like, I have to go to the bathroom. And this way I like got some distance to watch from afar as she checked out with the diapers. And then we're walking out the door and she still hadn't noticed. She paid for the diapers and we're leaving. And it's the funniest thing to me in the entire world. And I said, why did you buy those? And she goes, what? And I said, look in your bag. And she sees hygienic diapers. And she had to go wait in line to return them for like 20 minutes. And that's when I felt bad. That was a bit that got out of hand.
Yeah. I love that. It's so weird because, like I said, like I don't like being the center of attention, like especially in public, like stuff like that. But I do things where like I said, I have to be in control of the situation because then I know I'm like, all right, it can end at any time. You know what I mean? Like I'm in control of when this ends. I did a thing once where like it's a running joke I still have with her where it's like I pretend like I'm obsessed with potatoes. There's no backstory to it. It's just how it is. And we went to the store the one time and they have bags and bags of like russet potatoes or Idaho potatoes, whatever you want to call them. And I filled up the cart with all the bags from the display. I'm like, we need more potatoes. We're getting side eyes from like the produce department guy. I'm just like, I'll put them back. I'm sorry. But like we've done that where it's like I have a backpack. I've like all sorts of camera equipment and stuff. So I have tons of backpacks and stuff for hiking and things like that too. And I make French fries occasionally at home, and so we'll buy like a bag of potatoes.
When you're obsessed with potatoes, that's what you do.
Yeah, and so I took them out of the bag and I filled my backpack up with them. I'm always home before her, and I hear the door shut and the dog goes running out. So I grab the backpack full of potatoes and I run out and I pretend to trip. I'm like, oh, and I drop it and the potatoes all go flying out of the back. I'm like, my potatoes. And it just drives her nuts. She's like, please stop.
It's a good bit.
It's funny. I had an idea.
It's harmless too, though.
Yeah. I had an idea where back when I was streaming more on Twitch, I was going to have a running bit where I would just have a potato sitting behind me. And then like the next stream, I'd have like two. And I would just keep building it up to the point where the entire room is filled with potatoes. And like they'd get like eyes on them and stuff. Like they'd like potato eyes where the roots are growing out of them. Like they would just get out of hand. Like I thought that'd be a hilarious running joke.
Are you familiar with James Veitch?
No, I've never heard that name, actually.
He's a British comedian, and he did a bit similar to that. So it was delightful. But instead, so he had a roommate he hated, and he would buy one rubber ducky a day.
I see a picture of him with a bunch of rubber ducks.
Yeah, yeah. And so watch the bit later. I can't even do it justice. So after we're done with this, I just suggest you go watch that and just laugh as much as I did, I hope. My bit that I do that my girlfriend hates is when we're in a social situation and someone mentions someone. The one that I'm like, I think is my golden example is I pretend like I don't know who someone is, or I know them from their least famous thing. And so for instance, someone was talking about Cher the other day. Around us, and I like said,
"The girl from Deadpool."
No, I said, "Even I was like, Cher. Do you mean Chaz Bono's mom? Is that who you're talking about right now?" And then, or if someone like says, like, if they're talking about, I don't know, Leonardo DiCaprio, I'd be like, "Wait, are you talking about the kid that was in Growing Pains? What's he up to these days?" But I say it so straight faced that people are like, wait, do you really not know who he is? Like, you know him from Growing Pains? It's my favorite bit to do.
My idea for the potato bit goes back to, it was a Reddit post from ages ago where the guy talks about, like, today I fucked up by pretending not to know what a potato was. Like, I guess I'm going to butcher the story, but, like, he talks about, like, going over to his girlfriend's parents to meet them for the first time. And then makes a joke about not knowing what a potato is or something, and then decided to stick with it. And then got to the point where there was like the point of no return where it's like, I'm in too deep. I can't get out of this now. And he just stuck with it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Zoom So pandemic just started, and then Zoom mm-hmm. was like the new thing, and we're all like, Zoom is so cool. And then the woman whose daughter used her computer before her put filters on their Zoom, so she was an AI potato.
And I never saw that. No.
Oh, Google it. It's so funny. And so she's stuck in her business meeting, and they're like, "You're a potato," and she goes, "I don't know how to not be a potato." There was also a very similar situation where at the beginning of lockdown, I don't know if they're still doing this, but they were doing Zoom court dates and for like low level offenses. Yeah. And the defense lawyer, his child used a very similar AI thing and turned him into a cat. And he's trying to.
I do remember that. I've seen that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the cat one and the potato one that are just so funny.
I think that's
one
where. I forget what he says. Like, can we move past the cat? I'm fine with being a cat or something like that.
I would just mute my camera, but no one would think that at that point.
Yeah. I don't know.
One of those were the days.
I do want to ask you this because we're a little over an hour here. We'll wrap up soon. But like winning over a crowd, like how you go about trying to do that. Because like I said, I'm basing my experience now around my wedding and prepping for that, which is it's the crux of this episode, I feel like, is bringing comedy to my wedding at the expense of everyone else. But like, how do you win over a crowd?
Cool. Good question. I think first off, pay side them? Note, you what?
Just pay them in cash in advance.
Yeah, pay them. That's what I do. No, what I think you should do, side note, is like do a whole series of podcasts where you interview people on how to have like the funniest wedding.
Mm. I'm diverging again. So this is actually news for the show here. So I guess this is how I'm going to break this. But one of the things I've always said is like the reason I do the show is because I enjoy it, meeting new people and getting to chat with them. But I have so much going on in my life now that I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. And part of that stems from, I still enjoy meeting people on the show here and talking to them. But part of it stems from the behind the scenes stuff of like editing and promoting and things like that. So I'm thinking I'm going to end the show here at like episode 250, which mm-hmm. is 31 episodes away. The final episode will come out the week of my wedding, like 3 days after my wedding.
Oh, I'm love like, that.
What if I have the final episode be at my wedding and I'm just not during the wedding, but like the day before when I have like all my groomsmen there or whatever, like it's going to be like my cousins, my friends, part-time co-host of the show, Klaus is going to be there. Former host is going to be there.
I'm I like, love that.
That would be hilarious if the final episode is me getting married and just declaring my life is over and I can't do the podcast anymore.
I'm sure your wife would love that.
But I was like, that'd be a pretty neat final episode. It's literally just, hey, it's over. I'm married now. And that's it.
Yeah, I like that. Winning over an audience. I think that my best advice has always been to not really try so much and just try to be yourself. And the experience or the advice that I got when I first started doing comedy from a writing teacher was don't write for other people, write for yourself because you'll find an audience. So like if I'm writing what I think you want to hear, and it's not going to go well, but if I'm writing what I think is funny, there will be like whatever percentage, like 4% of people that are like, that's so funny. But that 4% is like a good group of people that they're going to obsess over you, right? And so, but like the way that I navigate that is I would say like 60% of the time I have a good stand-up show, maybe 70%, where I'm like, this is good, the audience liked me, the energy was good, everything went well exactly how I wanted to, like a little over half the time. But I mean I don't try to talk about politics on stage, but I am very liberal and I'm sure that comes out by accident a lot of times. And when I perform in like non-liberal areas, they like me fine.
You, comrade.
Thank you. Thank you,
he's
comrade.
Going too far in the other direction. It's like, too thank far. You, comrade.
Comrade.
He's not far enough. He only has one sickle.
Louis. I like the Russian accent. My girlfriend's Russian. She does not have an accent, but I've been recently trying to get my Russian accent down and she is not having it. Like, oh man, what's a good phrase that they say? Like,
I've been trying to work on my Italian accent because my girlfriend claims to be Italian, but she's not.
I would say, like, привет, my друг. Privyet moy drug means hello, my friend. And then if it's a girl, you say Privyet moya druga. But or podruga. I'm so bad at Russian. Anyway, I'm diverging as I always do. So sometimes, like, I have a couple of jokes that are a little liberal, and if I'm performing them in like conservative neighborhoods, there's sometimes silence, sometimes not. I don't ever get like heckled by those people, but they clearly don't like it. And then what I learned are there's like maneuvers that I do where I'm just like, oh, you hate that joke? I hate it too. Don't worry. Or something like that. And then one time I was telling, I don't like this joke anymore, but I'm not even going to tell you the joke right now, but it's an abortion joke, but I never say abortion. And it just kind of is like a metaphor for abortion without being blah, blah, blah. And when I tell it in like Los Angeles proper, LA audiences are like, that's so funny. But if I tell it in conservative neighborhoods outside of LA, they don't like it. They don't like it so much. And then one time, my favorite, I was performing for like 200 people and everything was going good till I got to that joke. And they clearly pulled back and I was like, ugh. And then I don't know why I said this. It just kind of came out of like, oh, you guys hate that joke? Don't worry. I know I'm a liberal piece of shit. And they just started laughing so hard that I was like, this joke kills in New York, just like my abortion killed. And I don't know where that came from. I don't know why. But like after that, they were my best friend again because I recognized we were different, but we had similar, like as different as liberals and conservatives are and moderates or whatever. We're all the same. We have like very same, like it's little that is actually different. But
it's weird. It's fascinating. Like the idea of like winning over the crowd. Cause like I said, going back to what I'd said previously too, is like, I, as long as I'm finding it hilarious, I'm fine with that. At the same time, I don't want everyone to sit there for 10, 15 minutes while I'm just up there making like just shit talking essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause like on that note, then the other advice people get a lot is like, establish dialogue. And so if you're talking to people, not necessarily crowd work, but if you are listening to what they're saying, because like I have this one joke that went viral a few years ago that I don't particularly like, but I tell it a lot because it always wins the audience over. And it's so stupid, but it's I met my girlfriend the old-fashioned way. I untied her from a train track. It's so dumb, right? But like it went viral, and if like 90% of the time, if I talk to, I email a comedy club booker, I was like, hey, can I do your show? And they're like, yeah, we saw your train track joke. We loved it. And I was like, oh, why is that the joke that everyone finds? I hate it. But anyway, I was struggling in a show in a conservative neighborhood again recently. And I was like, all right, maybe I'll tell the train track joke ahead of time and that'll win them over. And I told it. And instead of uproarious laughter like I normally get, it was quiet.
Pro-women being tied to train tracks. I get
they're pro-women. They love it. They love a twirly mustached villain. And I was just like, what do I do? And then there was dead silence. And this one woman just broke the silence by yelling, no. And I said, oh, you hate that joke? I hate myself for writing that joke. And then the audience laughed and was on my side again. So I felt like, just by listening and having a dialogue, they were down again. Yeah.
It's fascinating. I remember I took a public speaking course my freshman year of college, and it was nerve-wracking because I had not done any like public speaking or anything before then. Mm-hmm. And literally day one, we're told like, all right, come up front. We're going to talk about like what you guys did over the summer. I was like, oh, shit. What I did was nothing.
I'm sure they love that.
I just made shit up.
I
was just like, it was a weird cast of characters. The one guy got up and talked about like his lizard collection, whatever. But it was like that. Like people talking about like, oh, I went on vacation with my family, this and that. And I was like, okay, how am I going to fit into this? And I remember I just talked about like going on vacation or something. Looking at different universities, that was it. I'm just like, it was the most bizarre thing, and I hated that course. That was, again, it's one of the schools I left, and I don't think I ever learned anything from that course in the short time I was there. I gained more experience in public speaking just from being forced into it through work.
Yeah. But, do you think Lizard Guy listens to your podcast?
I don't know. I hope so. I don't remember I don't remember his name, but I hope he's listening. Doubt he remembers me since I was there like 2 weeks in that course.
Lizard Guy is definitely listening. Lizard Guy listens to everything.
He's got to put something on the background while he's messing around with his lizards.
That's not even a euphemism.
Yeah, there's that. I had a calculus class where a girl brought in a tarantula for some reason. She was just keeping it in her backpack. That was weird.
It's her emotional support tarantula.
I guess. I don't like spiders to begin with, but I was just like, is there a reason you brought this thing in here? Like we're doing math. I don't know why there's a spider here.
And yeah, don't love that.
She just took it out. She's holding it in her hand in the middle of class. The professor's teaching away. And she's like, oh, check this out. I'm like, why?
Why is a good question? Like, that's the best question there.
It's bizarre.
I don't like that for you.
It's small town colleges. I'm assuming it's the one small town college I went to. So I'm assuming every other one is exactly like it.
Well, I would go to a community college in Los Angeles, so I don't know what small town college is even like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I currently live in a town of 800 people, so.
My block has that many people.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know it's vastly different. Got Amish people hanging out, Mennonites running about.
I love Amish people.
They're a fascinating group. Terrifying at times, even though they're pacifists, could be a little unsettling.
I hear they listen to your podcast too. Like, you do well with the Amish.
Absolutely. They're biggest fans.
My manager told me that when I got booked for this. He's like, this guy, Josh, huge with the Amish.
You're in with the Amish.
It's like, yes, new demographic. Thank God.
Like, awesome. Those people are notorious for not using the internet. Great.
I know.
Even though they definitely do. They absolutely
do.
They do. They have cell phones. They're on Facebook.
They definitely do.
Yeah. But before we wrap up, where can people go to check out all of your stuff, all your work?
Good question. Mostly on YouTube and TikTok. I don't know why. Maybe you guys could help me fix this. But the YouTube algorithm used to bump me up so much, and now I'm not getting any bump. So maybe I just need all of everyone to start watching me on YouTube again. That's sad. And then I almost said Spotify. I don't have anything on Spotify, so don't go on Spotify. YouTube and TikTok, mostly Instagram too. I forgot about that one. But it's all at Ronnie Pascal and all of it.
Ronnie Pancakes Pascal on TikTok.
Ronnie Pancakes Pascal, because there was my phone used to autocorrect my name to Ronnie Pancakes, and I had this big long-winded joke about that. That's only funny to me and my brother, but I'm like, that's funny.
Fun. Autocorrect is a real joy.
Yeah, the joke was like, my phone autocorrects my name from Ronnie Pascal to Ronnie Pancakes. Ronnie Pancakes sounds like this mafia guy who's not going to kill you, but he's going to make you delicious breakfast. It's not my best joke, but it's fine.
It works.
It works. Thanks.
Awesome.
This was such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I'm always excited to have different guests on. We've had some comedians on previously, and I love hearing about their different experiences with the, especially since we have people on from different areas. Like, you're obviously from LA. We have people on from like the Midwest and from the East Coast here as well. And seeing their different experiences from different areas is always cool to me. I appreciate not immediately lashing out if I say random people in front of businesses. It's always good. I hope you believe that the atmosphere is real.
The people who hear that but don't know what we talked about before we started recording are going to be like, what is he even talking about?
I hope that everyone that hears this knows exactly what I'm talking about, since it was all recorded and released. I'm gonna keep this in real quick. We did episode, right? And we were blown away by this guy. It's crazy. We're just like, what is he talking about? This guy's he's screaming, banging on his desk and whatever. And we're just like, what? But I should mention, the entire time, he's getting angrier and angrier at my co-host. And I'm sitting here fact checking him in real time. and he just keeps getting angry at my co-host, calling him an idiot, and then apologizing on my behalf, saying, I'm sorry, Josh, you have to put up with this guy. Even though I'm the one fact-checking him in real time and, like, arguing with him. And for some reason, he blamed the co-host and not me. But we're just blown away by this guy. It's the only episode we've ever done where, after the fact, he and I stayed, my co-host and I stayed on the call. We cut it and then started a second call. And we had both of our girlfriends come on and chat about it. And we'd be like, what are your thoughts on this guy? And I went back because the call had ended. So I was able to replay his audio. And I was like, listen to this. Like, it's the only episode we've ever done where we had the 30-minute extra that we recorded.
God, after that. I never released that.
I never released it because I don't want to put out an entire episode just shit talking a guest. I think that's incredibly rude. I'm happy to talk about it, but like, I don't, especially immediately afterwards, I'm like, this guy was bizarre. Fascinating. It was a great time. Like, I loved it. I don't think it was a very particularly entertaining episode. I think it was probably frustrating for people to listen to, quite honestly, but I didn't want to waste it. So I put it out there.
Yeah. That's the only thing to do.
But yeah, we've had some weird guests on, to say the least. But
I don't know what word I'm trying to say right now. I want that to happen to me.
like I said, it's news. It's as of this episode, I'm announcing it. The coming end of the show. I still plan on being a guest on other shows because it's way easier. I don't have to. I just have to show up and talk.
Yeah, that's my favorite part.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that, being a guest on more shows, because I'll have the time. And I hope that happens. I hope I get, there's been some shows I've guested on where it's like, oh, this is what this is. Okay. And it's weird. I want to be a guest on like a show where it's like really off the rails, because I'll thrive in that environment. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah. That's just feeding my bread and butter. Energy.
Yeah.
I love it.
But no, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it. Had a good time.
Thanks, Josh. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it. Go check out all this stuff and see you guys next time.
See ya. Bye.